Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week. Wait, Treya, you're wearing a sweater today. What's going on?
I know. It's really chilly here. I don't know what happened. It was nice and warm and toasty last weekend, and now I'm like freezing. My teeth are like chattering.
That's funny. Oh man, classic weather.
Yeah. Ugh, Arizona. Man, oh man. Like, we didn't have enough to deal with. Let's throw some weird weather at us, too.
Well, it's a crazy week because we have a very big chapter that is going to, well, it's going to rewrite a lot of history for the Harry Potter universe, in the sense that we finally get a full understanding of the character of Severus Snape. But before we dive into the Princess Tale, a couple things. One, we've got a couple reviews over there on Apple Podcasts that we wanted to read. And this one says, amazing, I love HP part 2, 5 stars. They said, hi, it's me again. I recently came back to listening and I forgot how much I love you guys. This podcast really dives into Harry Potter and explains the harder concepts, so I listened to it. I am excited to continue, and I'm glad I came back to this awesome podcast because it's literally the best.
Aww. We are literally thankful.
I wasn't sure if, you know, we were talking to Chris from, you know, Parks and Rec, if they, you know, he had written that because their name is just emojis, so I'm not sure. Maybe it is. Maybe it is literally Chris.
I love Rob Lowe. I love that Chris Traeger is really
exactly,
just Rob Lowe.
Exactly. Well, this one's fun because this one actually, Dre, comes from a friend of mine from church who told me that he had given us the review. And it's Video Gamer 101, the necessary podcast for Harry Potter fans, 5 stars. I was introduced to Harry Potter at a later age, and so far I've only seen the movies that I love. But this podcast has inspired me to start reading the books. So it's cool to be able to read along with the podcast. Very well done. Can't wait to listen to them all. And so, well, I definitely appreciate that, Josh. And I'm excited that we were the impetus for him to start reading the books. How cool is that, Drea?
Oh my gosh, so many big words right there, too. I'm not awake enough for that. But yes, no, I love when it's people mm-hmm. we know. It both makes me excited and happy and a little self-conscious too. I'm definitely made for radio and not video, so it's good to be able to have that level of, you know, removed from things. A girlfriend of mine at work also said she just started listening, so she's several hundred episodes back at this point. So when she gets to this, it'll be a surprise. But I mean, there's a part of me that's super excited and then a little wary too. So you know, we love it and bring it on. And we don't have many episodes left. I think we have 5 after this one. So it's bittersweet, but keep the love coming. It'll let us go out on the
high. We really do appreciate it. And I think what's great about it is that, you know, it's a podcast to which, you know, people can continue to discover for years and years as people read Harry Potter. So we love it. Thank you so much for the reviews. Of course, you can give us your review over on Apple Podcasts and we'll read it on the show. And you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So just make sure you're subscribed so you get it as soon as it drops. You can find us on Twitter at JoinNerdParty or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You can find us on Instagram at TheNerdParty. And also, we've got TheNerdParty.com where you can check out all of the shows that we do. And of course, you know, you can go to the contact section and send us an email. We love getting emails. Dre, we just got one the other day and they were basically just saying how much they love the show. And
we had some good conversation on the social medias mm-hmm. too, on Facebook. You know, someone had some good comments and thoughts as well on an episode or two ago.
We absolutely did. And I just wanted to say too that the email that we got, Aisha wanted us to call her out on the show. So there you go, Aisha. you've been made Owlpost famous. So
welcome. Exactly. Welcome to history.
So we're at chapter 33, The Prince's Tale, and as they wrap up, you know, getting the memory from Stape, Stape dies. Voldemort comes on the intercom again, basically, and tells everybody that they've fought valiantly, that he doesn't want any more magical blood spilt, and then he specifically challenges Harry Potter to come find him and not let more people die in his name, but to come basically mano a mano, and that he will give them 1 hour.
So what's so interesting about that, before we move on and go too much further, as he says that and as we process what he said, and by us, I mean the characters, right? Like, as the characters process what just happened, Voldemort just continues to show how manipulative he is and how well he knows, like, the soft spots for people, right? He knows that calling Harry out and making him feel responsible for everything that's happened is his trigger. Because that's exactly what it does, is Harry sits there and fixates on this idea that it's his fault all of this is happening and that all these people have died for him. When, you know, I think half a book ago or a book ago, we really reinforced in Harry that this isn't about Harry. This is about what Harry represents, right? But Dumbledore's kind of creeping back in there and trying to kind of tweak that message again and manipulate Harry into coming to face him in the forest.
Yeah, I do love that idea. And I think it is really smart, because you're absolutely right. It does trigger Harry, and he does feel responsible for all of these people, you know, working to defend the castle. And he realizes, you know, in the end, too, this is all about him and Voldemort. He knows that. And so, you know, It's really interesting, because, you know, they have this hour now and they head back to the castle and it's kind of deserted, and they realize everybody's in the Great Hall. And this is so tragic, because, you know, as they enter the Great Hall, you know, they see all of the dead that are lying in the middle of the hall. And, you know, you can see the Weasleys around Fred's body, and, you know, everybody's crying, of course, still. Ginny is red-faced, and Hermione goes to hug her, and, you know, Bill and Fleur and Percy are all there as well. And Harry sees that two of his best friends are dead as well, and he sees the fact that, you know, Tonks and Lupin have died. And it's so heart-wrenching, yeah, because he can't be there. He can't stay there. And so because he has this mission and it allows him to be able to extricate himself from this moment and head up to Dumbledore's office to look for the Pensieve. But it's just so, I mean, it's heartbreaking, because, you know, the way she even describes it is Harry would tear his heart out of his chest if he could, because this is just so painful.
She doesn't say it here, but part of why this is so heart-wrenching is that Harry, you know, Harry is kind of borderline feeling responsible again because of the message that Voldemort just put in his head. He goes in to see two people he cares so much about are dead, but on top of that, it's exactly what happened to him as a kid has now happened to Teddy, right?
Yeah.
Has now happened to Lupin and Tonks' son. And that there's got to be, he knows what this kid is in for now. Well, at least he thinks he knows what this kid is in for now, right?
I mean, like, hopefully he won't be in a cupboard under the stairs.
Right. Yes. Agreed. Hopefully there's a level of removal there. But he's still in for, you know, he now knows what it feels like to not know what your parents are like, to have to grow up not knowing them, right? And I think that with everything else, is just like, that's the thing that's just too much for him. He just needs to get away. He kind of runs. He takes off. He yells at the gargoyle. And I love this part, because, you know, he screams at the gargoyle the password for Dumbledore's office, or McGonagall's office, or Snape's office, or whoever's office you want to call it, the headmaster's office. And he yells, "Dumbledore," right? I don't actually think that's the password. I feel like the gargoyles know that the level of intensity and passion and what's going on, there's almost some sort of awareness there that they're like, eh, it doesn't matter. Come on in, buddy. You know, like there's this like understated, he has a right to be there, whether or not the password was correct or not. And so he kind of rushes into the office. And I think seeing the portrait of Dumbledore empty when he enters the office is a good representation of just how he's feeling. He's just feeling empty.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, for him, his thought process is, look, at least I can escape into anybody's memories, regardless of it's Snape or not. Like, it'll just be good to kind of escape. And so what is interesting here and what follows are a bunch of different memories from Snape to which help us completely understand this character in a way that we've only had hinted at as we've been reading throughout the books. I mean, the entire time, and somebody yelled at us on their review from Apple Podcast years ago that we didn't understand Snape. And, well, the reason we didn't quote-unquote understand Snape is because we weren't jumping ahead. But she's hinted at the entire book that there's something about Snape, that there's something about him to which, one, Dumbledore has trusted, as well as that there's something else going on, that he's not quite the bad guy that he seems. Like, he's like a transformer. There's more than meets the eye with Snape, you know? And so what we get here, the first memory, is Snape's first meeting with Lily. And Lily has been doing magic. You know, she has realized she has this ability, and it's something to which her sister Petunia does not like at all because she can't do it. And so we immediately see that there's jealousy here. And Snape kind of emerges onto the scene. He's been watching Lily for a long time and seeing that she's like him. You know, she's a witch. And he's the one throughout a lot of these early memories that's going to basically be her tutor before they go to Hogwarts as to what it means to be a witch and a wizard and what that world is like. And it, in many of these memories too, what we get is a compounding of the jealousy between sisters here, because Petunia doesn't have the same powers and she doesn't handle it very well.
Yeah, I think... So there's so much what you said there. I think to your point about Snape throughout the books, like, yeah, there's always been something that didn't, like, we always got the impression we were missing something, right? We had to either sort of blindly trust through a portion of it, or we had to, you know, Snape always kind of being hard on Harry. It felt like there was a reason for that, right? He had a very different perspective on Harry than others. And, you know, we kind of came to see that we thought maybe he was just projecting some of his parent, you know, of his dad because of, you know, sort of petty jealousy. We come to find in this section that it's just so much more than that. It's an amplified version of that feeling, right? And yeah, I think this is really where we also get an understanding. It's so interesting because this whole chapter is focused on Snape, but we learn so much about all these other characters that they're almost tertiary, right? We learn about his Aunt Petunia and kind of why she hated his mom and dad so, so much. We learn she becomes very vulnerable in this chapter too. And for not very many pages and not very much presence in this book, you know, we learn a lot about her. Same with, you know, we learn about Lily and sort of how she ended up with James Potter. But the whole thing is just, it's super, super into it. And it is really interesting to see, for Harry to see what his mom was like as a kid at his age, right? He got to see what from his mom's perspective, not his dad, but his mom's perspective, what it was like to not know about this world and to come into the world the same as he did. And that's got to be heartwarming for him.
Well, and this also, you know, in the second memory, one of the things that really we really get here is this conversation that him and Lily are having about being a part of, you know, a magical family, coming from a muggle family, and if there is any difference between that. And she even asks him that, you know, if there is a difference. And he says no. And so one of the things that we're going to get in this chapter, especially with Snape and Lily, is the choices we make and the ideologies that we're going to follow and how we're going to then live our lives, and that we're going to juxtapose those characters as they go two separate ways. And I think the repercussions that we end up having with Snape make this so interesting, because Snape chooses a path that causes him immense pain and suffering. And it's the path that probably seemingly promised him, you know, ultimate power, ultimate all of these things, and yet leads to death, right? Like, soul-wise for Snape, like, he gets crushed by following this way. And so I think she's showing through this story between Lily and Snape here the differences in their choices and the values to which they are going to follow. And what's fascinating is here they seem to be on the same page in this memory. And moving forward, they are going to continually choose different paths that is going to lead them in completely different ways.
Yeah, and for me, those paths are kind of the difference between what's right and what's easy.
Yep, exactly.
Right? Snape felt like the decisions at the time were easier. It caused the least amount of waves. He had to be the least confrontational, right? He didn't have to have a sense of standing in his own sort of morality. He kind of got to go along with the flow, which ultimately ended up costing him so much more than standing up for himself would have. Whereas Lily stayed true to herself, true to what she knew and believed to be right, true to the people who exhibited the values that she most aligned with, even though they weren't perfect, right? We know Sirius and James weren't perfect, but that they genuinely had good intentions and good hearts. And while it still ended in sadness and death for her, she could do so knowing she lived the right way, right? And so she made difficult decisions and stood up for herself to create a better world for everybody. And Snape just ended up hurting the person he loved the most in the world, which becomes his main motivator for the rest of his life.
Well, and even here in this second memory, we kind of start a little bit of separation in that, you know, they're found by Petunia, you know, and you know, because they're talking alone and he gets upset. And, you know, the magic he can't control causes a branch to fall on Petunia and hurt her shoulder. And so we are already kind of starting this opportunity. And we also find out through this that this confrontation, that they had found a letter that Petunia had written to the Hogwarts headmaster asking to be let into Hogwarts. And, you know, he politely declines because obviously she's not a witch. She does not have the innate power needed to be able to go to the school. And so, again, this is creating this rift between sisters and this intense jealousy, which leads to hate between Petunia and Lily and, of course, everything wizard related. And, you know, James is like, why would it matter if she hates you? She's only a... And, you know, you can see this divide, right? Like, for him, it matters more whether or not you're a witch or a wizard. And if you're a wizard or a witch, it puts you in a category above those who are not already. And that, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think when we talk about the ists out in the world and the isms in the world, right, I feel like there are levels of things, right? Like, not everyone, I don't know. I feel like Snape in this case does have a magical versus non-magical ism, right? he doesn't believe those who are non-magical are as worth it as those who are magical. Where Voldemort takes that to the next level, not just those who are magical versus not magical, but those who are pure blood magic versus not pure blood magic. And he kind of has more tiers built into his ism, if you will, right? But it sounds like some of, you know, I think we have some truthful moments here. I think, and it shows how much Snape really deviates from his true beliefs as he grows up. And he goes from telling her that there is no difference between being muggle-born and not muggle-born. Very honestly, as a kid, there's nothing here to believe he would lie there, to later in the chapter and later in life calling her a mudblood and very bitterly in the moment. And her kind of calling him on that was the end of their relationship, right? Her calling him out on the fact that, like, it doesn't matter if you didn't mean to call me that. I've heard you call others that. Like, you adopted that philosophy at this point. So I'm no different and I don't want to be any different than those other people, right? I think it's just so interesting. We also get a snapshot, very, very tiny here, into Snape's sort of upbringing, right? And that his mom and dad are fighting and his dad seems to be somewhat cruel and unhappy all the time. And when we meet his mom on platform 9 3/4, she looks very, I think they describe her as sour faced. Like, she does not look happy either. And that he's honestly looking forward to going to Hogwarts for much of the same reason as Voldemort did. He wanted to get away from that. He wanted a place to call home where he felt happy and safe. So I think it's really interesting, these sort of themes that exist. And that should have been something that Harry could relate to and Snape could relate to Harry with. Mm-hmm. And that was just not a point for them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you get the feeling, and I read it slightly differently. I think, you know, his childhood household does have, I mean, because when he says to Lily that there is no difference, she writes that he hesitates. And I think that there's always a deep-seated thing. And part of that is that I don't think that he likes his dad. I think he has daddy issues,
yeah.
And that causes him to kind of choose this side. And again, I think one of the things that we, she's so good at being nuanced here, is what she's showing is how all of these things can have an impact on what you choose later in life. How you're raised, whether you're loved or not, you know, can have a massive impact on whether you want to grab power. And whether that's going to be important to you. And so all of those things play into this. And so that continues too, because they have this moment on the train where, you know, Snape is talking to Lily and how he's like, you better be a Slytherin, and who walks by but James and Sirius. And they have this confrontation already between the two about, you know, whether or not who's better, you know, Slytherin or Gryffindor. And this really kind of sets up a dichotomy that's going to continue then as they get into school, because Lily is going to be put into Gryffindor and Snape is going to be a Slytherin. And she begins to see that he's hanging out with all these people that she doesn't like. She sees them as being dangerous, like Avery and Culber, and the things that they have done to other students that are just kind of evil and dark magic. And he brings up, you know, James and his friends and what they do. And again, the difference we kind of see between these characters, where James and his friends are mischievous, right? But nothing they're doing is really hurting anyone, right? I mean, they sometimes use their magic in ways that they shouldn't. We also see that with what happens with Snape. And you know, we've already seen that memory of them turning him upside down and everything. Yes, it's cruel, right? It's not right. But it's also not going to kill Snape. And there's nothing seriously dark about the magic they're using. But again, we're kind of seeing the different paths. Snape is choosing a much darker path, and Lily and the people she's going to end up associating with for the rest of her life choose a path to which they learn from those early mistakes, right? They become different and better people, whereas Snape continually kind of goes down the dark path, and it leads him to a place again, which there's no happiness, there's no joy. It just ends in death.
Yeah, I think I agree. For me, the hesitation in his response to Lily when they're kids was more, yes, there are people that view these differently, but my honest answer is that, I mean, someone can be just as qualified as not. That's kind of how I took it. So somewhat what you said, like there definitely was a hesitation, but I read into it a little bit differently. But I do think what's really interesting is, yeah, and we also don't quite know, because we come to find out through this conversation too, not to justify James or Sirius and Lupin's, you know, treatment of Snape at all, but, you know, he also has sort of been a participant in this, right? He's been kind of tracking them and spreading rumors about Lupin being a werewolf, which we know come to be true, but we also know how kids that age and even adults treated Lupin, right? Like, that was still an attack to some extent, right? So I just think we come to find that there's just so much going on in that relationship, and that I think Lily felt like she had to kind of pick sides between good or good-ish and what she felt was not good, right? And I think, to your point, her calling out things as evil and dark responses versus sort of measured responses and what you'd expect someone of their age to respond as, it didn't really feel like the people and Snape, who he aligned himself with, like that they had measured responses to these things, right? Mm-hmm. That they were acting in a way that was just needing to be mature and behave, you know, like was inappropriate, but not evil. Right. And she's trying to highlight the fact that these people are responding evil.
Yes, yes.
Right. And she needed to choose the path of good, not the path of evil. And so for her, them being, what she called them, toe-ish or
she called them
like
a toe
that.
Rag them, like
yeah, them being kind of douchebags was better than them using illegal magic, right? Like she's like, I'll take a douchebag over someone
right.
who is literally committing evil, heinous things mm-hmm. any day.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that, you know, their last main conversation that they ever have is him calling her a mudblood in front of a bunch of other people and then sleeping outside the Gryffindor common room until she comes out and they have a conversation. And she says to him, look, I can't pretend anymore. You've chosen your way. I've chosen mine. And what I really love about Relling's writing is that she does not shy away from the consequences of the choices that we make. And the consequence here for Snape is that, no, you will not be able to be friends with Lily. You have chosen your way, and it's a way that Lily cannot be a part of. And you literally have chosen the thing that will divorce you from the person that you love most in this world and will then lead to her eventual death. And I just, it's so sad, and it's so heartbreaking, and yet at the same time, it's the perfect lesson. You choose a path that leads you down the dark way, and for, as Yoda says, well, forever will it dominate your destiny. And that's exactly what happens to Snape. He can never truly escape the choices he made early in life. And that also goes to show that as a teenager, the choices you make then can have massive repercussions on your life that you can have to deal with forever. I mean, like, that could continue in perpetuity for the rest of your life. I can attest to that. Like, again, she's really, I think, doing such a great job of setting up a series to which kids can learn from, you know, like, that it makes a difference how you choose to live and what you choose to do even now.
Yeah, there's two parts to that I want to unpack. So yes, I 1,000% agree with that, that you have to think about the choices you make, because some might have a lasting impact for the rest of the day. Some might have a lasting impact for the rest of yours and others' lives, right? Like the choice he made impacted so many other people, right? Like his choice also set up the rest of Harry's life, right? Not just his, but Harry's. So thinking about those choices and what they mean, and that all these little choices feed into becoming who you are, right? Because she calls out, like, you may not have meant to call me a mudblood, but I have watched you call others. I have watched you treat other people this way, right? And that impacted her even before he called her that, right? Like, he was becoming a person whether he realized it or not. The second part to that, I think, is not just Snape and the decisions he makes, but I think Lily and her handling of this was a beautiful example of someone who has an incredibly high emotional intelligence, because she was also able to articulate that to him, stand in her truth, but also sort of, she never said, Snape, I don't love you, Snape, we're not friends. She still cared about him, but had to let him go, right? He had made his choice. They were two different paths. She had to recognize that and be able to say, you're going down one path, I'm going down another. I wish you well. Like, good luck. And that takes such maturity and such perception that most teenagers don't have, most adults don't have that. And it's so hard to be able to say, you may have been my first and oldest friend at this point, but I can't. And I hope this doesn't go the way I think this is going to go for you. You know, and I think that's such a mature conversation to have, that I think she's also showing you how to stand in your truth. And even when it's hard, like, here is how you do it. Here is a wonderful example of how you handle that situation, right?
Yeah. And I would add to that too. I think Rowling is also showing that this isn't just about personal choice or, you know, like personal definitions of like right or wrong. I definitely think she's right, falling down on the side that one side is evil and the other side is good. Like, they're, you know, right. And so, and what is that? Like, when we break that down, Lily mm-hmm. chooses a life of selflessness and love, and Snape chooses a life of selfishness and power. And so she's clearly, I think, again, she's reiterating classic morality of that there are certain things that are right and there are certain things that are wrong, and the choices you make to follow one side over the other have massive repercussions on your life. But like you said, I thought was really smart, it also has massive repercussions on those around you, right? And so that's where we get to that next memory where Snape has come to Dumbledore. And this is after, you know, Trelawney's, prophecy. And he talks about how, he's like, you have to hide them. You have to. He's like, you've got to keep her safe. You've got to. And, you know, Dumbledore is kind of disgusted, literally disgusted, he even says so, by Snape. And, but he says that he will do it. You know, he'll do it. And it flows right into the very next memory where Snape comes and they've died. And he's like, you said you would keep her safe. And Dumbledore has to explain, well, she put her trust, her and James put their trust in the wrong person, just as you have done. And it has led to their death. And so now you will help me protect her son, who has her eyes. You remember those green eyes, Snape. And this is where he makes him promise, Dumbledore promise, that he will never tell that, you know, he's a part of this side, which obviously gets used later on because then he can work for Voldemort and everything. But we never will know. This is Snape. Dumbledore even says people will never know the best of you. You know, they will only see this other side. And so it's haunting and awful, and yet in some ways I don't really necessarily feel sorry for Snape, because, you know, Lily was absolutely right. You chose your side, and this is the consequence of that. And it is heartbreaking, but at the same time it's like, what did you expect, bro?
So for me, this whole story feeds back into something that I think as young people and somewhat as older people, but I think it's super prevalent when you're kind of from puberty till like your late 20s. This is not your whole world. Mm-hmm. The moment you're in is not your whole world, right? The pain you feel, the suffering you're going through when you're 19, 16, 17, 22, like that's not your whole world, right? Like this is a small piece of who you're going to become and what you're going to live. And there's so much more to life, right? And I think when you think about it that way too, and the fact that she talks a lot about how this is a journey for her of depression and suicide, thinking about that too, like this is not your whole life, right? And Snape lived his whole teenage life as if that moment was everything. Yeah. And it caused him so much pain in the long run.
Long-term thinking, you got to have it.
Right. You have to remember, have to have perspective about your life. And it's hard in the moment because you're just like wallowing in sorrow. And I've been there. And it's hard to remind yourself that this other person isn't your whole world and that there's, you know, more out there and things like that. It's all those cliches people tell you. There's more fish in the sea and, you know, all that stuff. But it really is true. That I also think that I don't think I felt sorry for Snape, but there's definitely a part of me that I really respected the fact that Dumbledore here said to do what you want to do, you have to be a villain for the rest of your life. No one's ever going to understand you. It's going to be a lonely path, right? You're not going to let people see the best of you. And that's the sacrifice you're making, right? He basically went from, I made the easy decisions. I wanted power. I wanted all these things to, I'm going to live a life of suffering, which is a huge sacrifice. And I got to have respect for the fact that he lived and breathed that to the day he died.
Yep.
Right. So for me, I don't think I necessarily had empathy for him, but I definitely had respect for the fact that that's a hard decision to make and to live with. And he did. He did it. He came through. And while he couldn't change the decisions he made as a teenager, he at least did everything he could until the end of his life to kind of pay penance for what he did as a teenager, mm-hmm. and the consequences of what his decision led to, right? And that he wanted no recognition for doing that, right?
Well, and from anyone, especially Harry, I mean.
And anyone at all. No one needed to know. No one should know, right? It wasn't even until the end that he really could tell Harry this journey, and it was after he died. And I can't really decide. I'm on the fence, and I'd love to hear from you and even some of our listeners. Him choosing to share this with Harry, was this for Snape's benefit and for sort of that last, I need to give myself peace of mind and sort of absolve my own guilt? Or was this to, I think this is something you should know. I think that you deserve to know. I think that having this context will help you. I don't really know where it felt, because it sort of to me felt a little bit like an apology and an absolution of guilt on Snape's part, and less about, I want to make you feel better, Harry.
I have an answer for that question, but I think it's going to come. I think it needs to come in a minute, because I think we need to talk through a little bit, you know, what follows here, because it follows in a second. Yeah. But we see through the years of Harry's existence at Hogwarts. And the way in which Dumbledore and Snape have been involved together with keeping Harry safe. And so from the first year where Dumbledore talks about, you know, you look for what you want in Harry, and I need your help keeping an eye on Quirrell. We see the fourth year where, you know, Karkaroff and him have been talking about the Dark Mark and how it's getting darker and how Karkaroff is going to run if he can, and how, you know, Snape says, no, he won't. We see in the sixth book, which just becomes super important for so much of what we talked about then, is that one, we see how finally Dumbledore got the scar on his hand, which is he had put the ring on for Marvolo Gaunt. And he had put it on, and it is Snape to which is helping keep Dumbledore alive. Like, that, there is a curse that Snape can only keep at bay for so long, and Dumbledore is going to die. And this is where we see that Dumbledore and him make a pact that, you know, you need to help Draco, you need to figure this out, but also when the moment comes, you need to be the one to kill me. This is where they have the conversation of whether or not, you know, it's soul.
It hurts their souls.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I love about it is that the way Dumbledore explains this, you alone know whether it's going to hurt your soul to help out an old man, avoid harm and humiliation. You know, he talks about the way in which Voldemort and Bellatrix love to like torture their victims and everything. And he's like, will that harm your soul to keep me from that humiliation, from that pain? And so I think it's a really beautiful conversation. And
I think it also touches a little bit on like, he also is the only one to know that he's actually mm-hmm. already dying, right? There's also like kind of a euthanasia portion to this as well. Not just in my suffering, but like, I'm going to die anyway. And while your soul, and you know that, like Draco's doesn't, right? Draco's intention behind the action is very different than your intention right. behind the action. And it feeds into that intentionality as a factor in whether or not the action damages your soul, right? I also thought that was pretty wise, and that perspective was really interesting, right? Like, no, I'm not punishing you and asking you to do this. I'm actually asking you to do me a favor, right? Like, I want you to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, this is where too, you know, Snape is getting angry with Dumbledore when they're talking about the fact that, you know, they're having these lessons together, Dumbledore and Harry, and he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what he's being told and why. And this is where Dumbledore explains a little bit the idea that he believes that Voldemort and Harry's souls are linked, and that, you know, the moment that Lily died for her son and Voldemort was shattered, that the last piece of his soul connected with Harry because it was the only thing around. And Snape being so frustrated now that they've been raising this boy only to die. And I think this is kind of the answer to the question that you were having earlier, which is, you know, this is, I think, probably the hardest thing for Snape to stomach, which is that everything he's done here, he's not going to be successful. You know, like, not only has he had to play the villain, but now he realizes that Harry must die, and that the last piece of him that exists out there as, you know, a part of Lily will be gone. I also think that this is, you know, we see, I think he's giving him the memory because Harry needs this information as well. He needs to see that this is the case, that, you know, he knew that neither could live while the other survives. Now Harry realizes that, no, this is me walking with my cross, you know, like this is, and that's the reason why he gives him these memories. He does, I think, do it to explain himself. But I also think it helps Harry to be able to then accept this last final piece of information, which, no, you are basically walking to Calvary. You know, there's no coming back from this.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that makes sense. I also think that Harry sort of suspected that he in fact was a Horcrux. And I don't know how much Snape knows about he knows about their journey. He gave them the sword, right? We come to find that he also is who placed that sword in the lake for them to find, right? And that the portrait they'd been carrying around with them wasn't necessarily taking information back to Snape as on the bad side, but was actually taking it back to Dumbledore's portrait and Snape as their, you know, ally. And so I think that there's so much there But yeah, I think that moment that Snape realized that kind of felt like all his efforts were for nothing, right? He didn't understand. He couldn't see kind of past that moment, talking about perspective, right? He can't see past that moment again, that Harry dying doesn't necessarily mean he's lost. It means things that are the greater mission of conquering evil is doable. It just comes with great sacrifice again. And another moment where Snape, even as an adult, struggles with sacrifice for the greater good. And why it's so important that he kept that relationship with Dumbledore, who could give him that perspective, right? And it also shows how those people in our life can have such an impact on our on us, right? If Dumbledore had been more of a mentor or ally with him when he was younger, would he have still made some of the decisions that he made, right? And I think that's true testament to like who you surround yourself with and how they support you is going to cause a huge impact on your life. I know I am not the person I would be without some very important people in my life who helped me become who I am. So I think that, you know, all of that is such a message she's giving. She's just giving us this huge message in this chapter and showing you in real, like showing you an example of how all of that plays out positively and not so positively. But I mean, the biggest takeaway beyond all that is the fact that we get confirmation that Harry is a Horcrux. Right? He has a part of Voldemort in him. And that is why one cannot live while the other survives, right? Like, he cannot kill Voldemort while he is still alive.
Well, and I think, you know, in all of this too, you know, again, we see that Snape is still always driven by his love for Lily. You know, his Patronus is the Doe, and he's always loved her, and he always will. And
that is one of those big takeaways you see everywhere all the time about this book, is that simple statement of always, that level of unconditional love that he had for Lily, and how he spent his entire life to honoring her.
Well, and I mean, he's a part of, I mean, he's the one who gives confunds Mundungus to have him go back to the Order and help save Harry, leaving by giving them the idea of the decoys, you know. We also see that, you know, Snape hitting George on that journey was an accident. He was actually aiming for a Death Eater and got George instead, you know. We see the fact that the leftover letter the house at Grimwald Place was actually Lily writing about how she had heard about Garrett Grindelwald being friends with Dumbledore, and she didn't think that was possible. And, you know, he takes that part of the letter because it says lots of love, Lily. He rips up the picture with Harry and his father in it that has her in it smiling, and he keeps that, you know. And then, of course, like you said, he is the one who delivers the sword to Harry and allows them to be able to destroy the Horcrux. And, you know, so we leave this chapter with having an understanding of this very flawed character who must live with the repercussions of their early actions in life and suffer because of them. Like, it, you know, his life is suffering. His life is pain because he chose a certain way at the beginning of his life, and he can never escape that. And I think there's a real beauty to that, because I think too many people in our world don't want to deal with the repercussions of their actions. And Harry Potter shows us here so well as a storyline that you can't. You are always going to be struggling, you know, with the choices that you make and the consequences of those choices, actions.
Yeah, we definitely live in a world where the consequences of our actions are more often, I don't want to say justified, they're more often excused. And I don't mean excused, I mean excused. Yes. Away than are accepted and dealt with, right? I think even in political situations here in the United States, we can see how people aren't willing to accept the consequences of the decisions they make, right? They are 1,000% willing to make it someone else's fault or justify it or whatever. And I think that that is so true in just society in general. We don't want to have to deal with that, right? Unless it's black and white, we find a way to not have to live with that. And that is so hard and makes it so, it makes it so, I don't know. I feel like it's the way our world is going and that it's about ourselves and not about everyone else. And I think Harry Potter is really saying that you have to be thoughtful about how your consequences impact other people and how they impact the world around you, right? And you can't really escape it. And if you do something that, well, you shouldn't have done that, you really should have to live with those consequences, which is why for me, Snape becomes such a redeemed character, because he honestly he accepts it. Right? He doesn't like it. I'm not saying we all have to like our consequences, but he accepts them and does what he needs to do with them, right? And kind of finds a way to live with them. So I think this is just, it's such a big chapter, and it really does tell you so much about Snape. And I remember reading some interesting article how Alan Rickman, when he was cast as Snape, he was told this about his character early on in the series as filming, because they wanted him to have context for his character as he acted it out. Right. And I can see it, right? I think Alan Rickman's one of my favorite things about the Harry Potter series. Like him and Maggie Smith are two of my favorite parts of the Harry Potter series. And I think that that is just so, I think that that's, here's where we all get that context, and it creates so much depth to a character that could easily just be evil, right? I think the other thing this does is it shows that not everything in the world is black and white, right? Like he made really terrible decisions that fell into that category, but he also then made decisions that didn't fall into that category, right? You can't necessarily say Snape is evil. You can say he made bad choices and things he did was evil. But I think when you get down to the end, you cannot honestly say that the character of Severus Snape is an evil character.
Yeah, I think a couple things. One is that Snape himself is a character who is working towards redemption, right? Like he's working, he's doing his penance to make up for the evil choices he's made. And so
he's good-ish, right? He is constantly striving to be better.
Yes, yes. And yet what we do kind of see is that, you know, he is a character to which cannot overcome many of the prejudices and preconceived notions he has about characters based off of things that have happened, which is a little bit sad, you know, like he is somebody who can never truly overcome himself. And again, I think the bent towards selfishness that he has, like even with when it comes to Harry, you know, we really see him being this complex character who just, he cannot let go of his hatred of you know, the fact that James took Lily away from him. And yet what it really is, it's self-hatred. Why? Because Sirius is the one who took Sirius away. Severus is the one who took Severus away from Lily, not the other way around. And, you know, that anger and hate, I think he just takes out on Harry. And again, it's the character flaw, right? To not truly, this is the way in which Snape, I don't think, ever truly deals with the repercussions of all of his choices in a healthy way. And so this is what makes him have an unhealthy relationship with Harry. And so, yeah, I think it's just really fascinating to be able to deconstruct this character and really get to the root of things as to who and why he was. And again, like we said all the way back at the beginning, Severus's choices have a massive impact on everyone in this series.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I feel like that makes Snape so representative of the human condition, right? Like, we all struggle to push through these things all the time, right? Not all of us are a Harry or a Hermione or a Dumbledore. Like, even Dumbledore sort of dealt with some of what Snape's dealing with in a different way with his, you know, his time with Grindelwald and some of that, right? Like, he is not a perfect character, nor are we perfect people, right? All we can do is continue to try to be better, and all we can do is try to remain objective and have a perspective on how our biases and how our own personal feelings are impacting our judgment, right? And that, I think, is a lifelong struggle we have as human beings. And I think that seeing it play out in Snape and seeing that even all the way to the end, he struggled to let go of those things that hurt him so much also show us how much that does actually hurt you in the long run, and how much right. You have to forgive and let go and move on and trust and be vulnerable. I think that's the other thing Snape never did with anybody but Dumbledore, was but be vulnerable, right? As if he had been vulnerable with Harry, he may have gotten slightly hurt, but he also could have had a deep, enriching, and lasting relationship with him and could have impacted things for the better. So I think it's just Snape is such a, he's such a complex, flawed anti-hero, and he's one of my favorite anti-heroes of all of literature because he's so relatable that you love him and you hate him and you can't empathize with him, but you understand, and like there's just so much into him that this chapter alone mm-hmm. is one of my all-time favorites, where we really get to close a bunch of Easter eggs and wrap up a bunch of storylines, and I think it really does cross T's and dot I's to almost the very end of this journey, and it's almost like we're being rewarded with this because we made it through all the books, right? We stuck with it to get this amazing reward at the end. So for me, I love hate the character of Snape.
Well, and I think the beauty of it is that, you know, you're kind of talking about, you know, the way we kind of see some of the ramifications of this in our world today. But I think those ramifications play out because people have chosen to live their life as Snape did early on, right? And so it really does go to show that the values that we choose to live by, even from our earliest of ages, makes a massive difference on what we are going to be as a human being as we get older. And so, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, you train up a child the way they should go. When they're old, they will not depart from it. And so I think it's really interesting because the next chapter and the next couple chapters, we're really going to get into, I think, I would say some more biblical illustrations. But she kind of uses that as an illustration here, you know, is that the way Snape was as a child, the choices, the values which he decided to live by haunt him for the rest of his life. And so I think that's a wonderful challenge for us to, even as, you know, myself and anyone who's reading these books at whatever age, like, what values are you choosing to live by? And are they harming others and yourself all at the same time? Or are they something that help others? And so it's such a, it's a massive thing.
Yeah. And to build on that, I kind of touched on it earlier too, but like, you can't navigate all of these choices alone either, right? Like, you have to get a good group of people. It's that whole, you need a tribe, right? That doesn't just apply when you have a kid, like I learned, but that applies to your whole
100%.
Life. 100%. Like, you cannot come at everything with the perspective with a universal, worldwide, global, or even just removed from yourself perspective without the help of other people. And I think that too shows here how Snape had the wrong people in that. And as a child, he had no mm-hmm. people in that, right? As we talked about his parents. And so I think that also reminds you that you need to find those people and those values yes. that you align with and they align with. And that becomes how you work to be the best version of yep. yourself for the world.
Yep.
Right. And I think that is a massive message in this whole series, is that it takes a village. It takes a trio, right? It takes all three perspectives to get this yep. right. And you're stronger together than you are on your own. And I think that is a big takeaway here too, in that it'll help you remember all the things of this isn't the everything, right? This is kind of a long episode, but I'll share a little personal thing here. In the middle of all the COVID pandemics, we had sort of a personal family tragedy happen. A younger member of our family lost perspective on life and, committed a really heinous crime against his wife, and impacted the rest of her family's life. And, you know, he's going to spend the next 30 years in jail and in his 20s, not being able to live life because of a brash action he took, and he lost perspective. She lost perspective. She felt lost and afraid and alone, and like she couldn't find help. He clearly didn't have enough perspective to ask for help, and their whole lives are ruined now. And I think we forget that it takes one thing to ruin our lives. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is what Harry Potter shows without having to personally experience that, is that it takes a series of horrible things built up into one final act. In this case, you know, Snape calling her a mudblood, to ruin yes. your life. And it plays out all the time. And, you know, unfortunately, our family had to live it in a very tragic way. And so I hope others can learn and not have to feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, it is, I just think it's so deep, you know, and it's what makes this series, I think, so good, is the fact that you can have these type of discussions. And I think it's a perfect way to end by saying, yes, you have to have community. And the community you choose to be a part of is going to shape who you're going to become. But we're not meant to live life alone. And I think absolutely. And it's funny how that is a theme that plays all the way back from the very first book. Harry chooses the community to live in. He chooses to say no to Malfoy and say yes to Ron yeah. and Hermione, right? And it makes all yeah. the difference in his life.
I think the phrasing is exactly, there are some wizarding families that are better than others. You know, I can help you find out which one is right. And Harry says, I think I can choose for myself, right? That goes back to what, like chapter 4, 5 of the first book, like very, very beginning, she's been telling us this message. So yeah, no, I totally 100% agree with that.
Well, we have big chapters left, obviously, only 5 episodes of the show left, so we're really excited to dive into those. But Drea, this has been a massive episode for everyone. I hope you've enjoyed it as we finally got a chance to talk through Snape. And if people want to catch up with you and see what you've got going on, or maybe talk about the fact that we've actually gotten to talk all about Snape now, where can they find you?
Yeah, come share your thoughts. With me, I'm on Twitter at PCFChick, or on Instagram more often than Twitter at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you could find me all over the place on social media under MattRushing02. You could find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills. We're talking through Star Wars each and every week together. You could find me all over on the TFM network doing a bunch of shows. One's called the 602 Club, where we're talking about all of the fandoms we love. Of course, also John Mills and I have been doing a bonus podcast there called Snyder Cuts, as we're working towards Zack Snyder's Justice League. So I hope you'll join us there. It's been a really interesting journey, especially as John has slowly become more of a Snyder fan than he thought he might be in the beginning. We're also doing Larry Trex as well as The Orb over there. Larry Trex is about the books, the comics of Star Trek, and The Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.